Have you always thought the Old Testament feasts were only for Israel? If so, you may be in for a surprise today, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Shalom, and welcome to Messianic Perspectives, a daily program where we look into the scriptures from a distinctive first century Jewish point of view. Today, our Bible teacher is Dr. Gary Hedrick, president of CJF Ministries. Gary's topic for this current series of studies is the Spring Feasts of the Lord. He's explaining how the seven feasts in Leviticus 23 are not only significant in themselves, but also how they collectively form an exciting outline of God's prophetic plan leading up to the Second Coming. I'll be back at the close of the program to tell you about our special offer. And now, with today's installment, here's Gary Hedrick.
All right, thank you, and welcome, listening friend, to another edition of Messianic Perspectives. It's good to have you with us today as we continue this study of the Spring Feasts. And if you have a Bible handy, why don't you turn with us to Leviticus chapter 23, and you can follow right along with us. And on the last program, we were talking about how the Lord was using this unleavened bread, which they were supposed to eat every day for seven consecutive days. We said he was getting them ready for their trek through the wilderness, using this bread. And I know I just told you to turn to Leviticus 23, but just for a moment, let's go back to Exodus chapter 16, because this is where we read about the manna God provided every morning for Israel while they were in the wilderness. And it says, in the morning, when the Israelites got up, there was dew all around the camp. And when the dew evaporated, it left behind these flakes all over the ground, like little bite-sized crackers. And the Israelites said, "Manna, what is it?" That's where they got the name manna. And Moses told them that was the bread the Lord had given them to eat. And he told them to go out and gather one omer. An omer was about 2 quarts. He told them to gather one omer for every person in their household. So the omer was the measurement for what it took to feed one person with manna for one day. They were supposed to take whatever they needed for that day. And it says whatever was left over, whatever they didn't pick up off the ground, just melted away and disappeared when it got hotter during the day. And it says, Moses told them not to try to accumulate manna overnight. He said, whatever you gather, you have to eat it that day, because it won't keep. He told them not even to try to keep it overnight. But look at this, verse 20. It says, notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses. In other words, they didn't pay any attention to Moses. They decided they would keep some of the manna overnight, and that way they would have a double portion the next morning. But you know what happened? It says when they got up the next morning, that old manna was rotten. It had maggots crawling all over it, and it had a horrible stench. But you know what? On the sixth day, they were supposed to gather twice as much manna because the Lord didn't leave any manna on the ground on the Sabbath. And that was the only day of the week when they could accumulate a double portion of manna and leave it overnight and it wouldn't spoil. Now, remember what we said on the last program? The Lord told Moses and Aaron he was going to give Israel specific instructions to test them, to see if they would obey him, to see if they could take orders. He said, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they walk in my law or no. Exodus 16:4. So it was a test. And so far, they're not doing too well on the test. He told them not to keep it overnight, except on the sixth day, but they tried to do it anyway. And all these tents had this horrible stench the next morning. But that's not all. He told them not to go out looking for manna on Shabbat, because he wasn't going to leave any. No one was supposed to do any work on that day. But on Sabbath morning, what do you think happened? Some of the people were up early scouring the countryside, just in case the Lord left a little manna lying around. You say, well, isn't that just like those Jewish people? They were so stubborn and stiff-necked. That sounds just like something they would do. Well, you don't think it's like the rest of us, huh? You don't think we have the same problem they have? Well, let me tell you something. We're all the same, whether we're Jewish or Gentile. We all have that same stubborn will. We all struggle with that same issue of self-determination. It's not something we learn. It's not a Jewish thing or a Gentile thing, because all you have to do is watch a little baby before he has any learned behaviors, and you'll see manifestations of that same evil inclination. Babies are naturally selfish. They want what they want, and they want it now. You see, we're all that way. So this was all good training for the children of Israel, because they needed to learn to obey God. But when he told them to eat unleavened bread for 7 days, or for 8 days, really, if you count Passover on the 14th day, when he told them to eat unleavened bread for 8 days, it was more than just a test to see if they would do it, although it was a test. And it was more than just training to get them ready for the wilderness wanderings when they would have nothing but manna to eat most of the time. It was actually a type of Yeshua, the Messiah, because Jesus himself said he was the bread of life. He was the living manna that came down from heaven, John chapter 6. And in Jewish tradition, the Feast of Unleavened Bread came to be celebrated with another lamb. So you had one lamb sacrificed on the evening of the 14th day. That was Passover. And then another lamb sacrificed on the following day, which was the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. That's why today they have the second Seder of Passover. And it's easy to justify, because after all, the first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread is considered a Sabbath. And what do you have on Erev Shabbat? A Seder. So there you go. So it's justifiable, but it's not actually in the Bible. In the Bible, there was one lamb per household, or they could use a goat if they wanted to, and that lamb or goat was sacrificed at twilight on the 14th day of Nisan. And at twilight on the 15th day of Nisan, they started the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So, the first way Yeshua fulfills the symbolism of Passover and unleavened bread is that he is without sin. He was without yeast or chametz. He had no sin. And you know, all sorts of legends and superstitions have grown up around this doctrine of Jesus' sinlessness. If you look at some of the apocryphal Christian writings, you find stories about Jesus when he was a little boy, you know, drawing pictures on the ground and then making those images come to life, and they flew away or they walked away, things like that. But they're just superstitions. There's nothing like that in the Bible. It's not like he was Superman with super strength and never made a mistake, you know, leap tall buildings with a single bound and that kind of stuff. That's not what this is about. Jesus was a carpenter. Do you think that means he never dropped a nail or that he never got a splinter in his finger? Do you think he never had to refinish a piece of wood because he didn't like the way it turned out? You see, it's not a sin to drop a nail on the floor. It's not a sin to forget where you put your hammer. That's just part of what it means to be human. And the Bible shows us that Jesus was fully human. He wasn't half God and half man. He was fully God and fully man. He had human limitations, which he voluntarily accepted, according to Philippians chapter 2. But he never committed a sin, whether knowingly or unknowingly. He never violated God's law. But notice, I didn't say Jesus never had any sin, because there was one point in time where he did have sin, and that was when he died on Calvary, as he hung there, nailed to that tree, suspended between heaven and earth, the only sinless man who ever lived. Do you know what God did? He took all the sins of the world, past, present, and future, and he dumped them there on his son. The Bible says he who knew no sin became sin for us. The one who never sinned became sin on our behalf. In other words, he died for our sins. It was a substitutionary death, just like the scapegoat. We don't have time right now to talk about the scapegoat, but we'll get to it on the next program. But you know what happened. The high priest laid his hands on the scapegoat and ceremonially transferred the sins of the nation to that animal. And when they sent Azazel away into the wilderness, it symbolized the fact that God had put the sins of the nation as far away from him as the east is from the west. But there was another goat that had to die, wasn't there? The goat that died symbolized the price of redemption. And the goat that was sent away, Azazel, symbolized the effect of redemption. The price was the shedding of the blood of an innocent creature. And the effect was that the sins of the nation were sent away, never to be seen again. The removal of guilt. And Jesus did the work of both of those goats, except that in ancient Israel, it was an annual process. It had to be done over and over again each and every year. But when Yeshua died for the sins of the world, it was done once for all and forever, never to be done again. That's why Moses could only strike the rock once. Because the shepherd would only be stricken one time, he would die once and for all. Well, that's all of our time for today. We'll pick it up here on the next program. Until then, this is your friend Gary Hedrick saying, take care. God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Gary. And thank you, listening friend, for tuning in today. It's always good to have you with us, whether you're listening from home, at work, or in your car. This is Messianic Perspectives, and you've been listening to Dr. Gary Hedrick talking about the Spring Feasts of the Lord, the seven annual meetings outlined in Leviticus 23. We have all the programs in this series available in a set of three CDs packaged in an attractive binder for a suggested contribution of just $18. That's the three CDs entitled The Spring Feasts of the Lord by Dr. Gary Hedrick for a gift of only $18. Just visit our secure online store at messianicspecialties.com to place your order. If you would prefer to order by mail, just address your request to Messianic Perspectives, P.O. Box 345, San Antonio, Texas, 78292. To order by phone, use our toll-free order line from the U.S. The number is 1-800-926-5397. Let me remind you that when you order the materials we offer here on the program, you're not only enabling us to remain here on your station, but you're also helping us take the good news of Yeshua HaMashiach to Jewish people and Gentiles all over the world. Even if you're one of our regular listeners, you still may not know that we're much more than just a radio program. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries, one of the largest missionary organizations in the world. We currently have missionary families serving the Lord all over the world, including the United States, Canada, South America, England, France, and of course, Israel. So when you write, consider helping us with a gift above the suggested amount. We'd be very grateful. Have you enjoyed this edition of Messianic Perspectives? Why not continue to learn about the Jewish roots of your Christian faith by inviting a speaker from CJF Ministries? Call our toll-free number, 1-800-926-5397, and we'll be happy to handle all of the details. And as always, when you're in touch with us, please mention the call letters of this station. If you're listening to our webcast or podcast, we need to know that too. I'm Liz Aiello. Join us next time, won't you, as Dr. Gary Hedrick continues our series of studies on the Spring Feasts of the Lord, right here on Messianic Perspectives. Messianic Perspectives is sponsored by CJF Ministries of San Antonio, Texas, and is made possible on this station by the free will contributions of our listeners in this area.